Having a little trouble finding our new location here in the basement, but we'll get started. As you remember, last year it was really chilly down here. I don't seem to detect that today. I think they did some repairs, I heard somewhere, but.
Well, Madam Chair, we're going to try to add a little hot air this morning.
That's right. Well, it is a hot topic, that's for sure.
I'll do my part.
So, committee members, we just have one item on the agenda today, and that is to listen to Representative Benson's bill, review it, and take some action on it. And I'll just mention to folks today, we're kind of one-sided. Although I saw Representative McNamara, we need you down at the table. Here, there you go. Just the plan at this point is to hear this bill and probably lay it over for inclusion. And we'll start building today a committee bill, because we will have to take some action on the parts of the budget, you know, that the governor has made his proposals on, and that we will be making some decisions on. So that'll be the point of what we'll do today. So, Representative Benson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'd like
for,
to
potentially over.
If I may, move House File 2799 for possible inclusion, to lay over and possible inclusion. And that's important because we are all serving on various committees, working and trying to find ways to deal with this budget shortfall. And so to come forward with a bill seeking appropriations is a difficult one. So I'd like to start by a couple of things. One of them is to say the situation may evolve over the next few weeks to make it more possible. We, for example, some of us serve on the budget or the finance committee, and the governor's proposal is assuming a significant, practically one-third of the budget shortfall, possibly coming from the Congress. So the idea of laying this bill over, I think, is a wise one, because the situation may change and we may find it more palatable to move forward on it. So my concern is that committee support us and move this bill forward at this point. That's the first one. Then I'd like to make an oral amendment, Madam Chair, if I may.
Senator Benson.
If one would look at line 1.5, the total $1,150,200. I'd like to scratch that and replace it with $500,000. And this is recognition of the facts that we're facing concerning the budget.
Okay. The amendment to put the bill in the position that the author would prefer it to be in is on line 1.5, strike 1,150,000. Right, and 200. 200. That's an odd number. And replace it with 500,000. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? No. Motion prevails, and the amendment. The bill is before us now, as you prefer, Representative Benson. Correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I will make just a few brief comments, and then turn it over to my excellent witnesses here today, who are very articulate and knowledgeable on this subject. I just want to say that, in my view, this issue of hunger is one that should be thought of as a standalone. It is different, really, in a fundamental way from what one usually thinks of as far as social welfare programs. It is a fundamental human right to have sufficient nutrition, and also affects all other areas of the society, from health care to even corrections. All these other issues relate to this fundamental need for nutrition. And I quoted earlier a discussion that went on in the 1930s concerning the New Deal programs, and people who were opposed to that at the time said, well, you know, if we wait around long enough, the economy will pick up and recover. And John Maynard Keynes, the great economist of the time, said, yes, but we'll all, eventually, we'll all be dead also. And with food nutrition, we're dealing with something on a daily basis, not something in the future. Something this afternoon, something this evening, something tomorrow morning. And I suspect many of you are in the same situation I am and have been. Although I've had periods, especially when I was young, when I was getting very hungry and wondering if my mother was ever going to finish preparing the dinner, I always knew that there would be nutrition there. And I think it's very difficult for many of us who are in the middle class or other classes who have not suffered food deprivation and faced the possibility that there was nothing to eat, can quite comprehend the importance and significance of the support for food nutrition. I also would like to point out to the committee that if one looks at the governor's budget proposal on page 17, he is calling for the provision to end food assistance to all legal non-citizens in the United States. So the Minnesota Food Assistance Program would, on the governor's proposal, be eliminated, and this will put additional pressure then on the food shelves. So with that brief introduction, I'd like to ask our testifiers to identify themselves and continue.
Thank you. And just before we do, let me just first welcome the 9th and 10th grade students from Woodcrest Academy. Where's Woodcrest Academy? In Fridley. Welcome to the committee. And as you can hear, we're talking about food and hunger today, a bill that would increase funding for our food shelves.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Colleen Moriarty, and I am the Executive Director of Hunger Solutions Minnesota. We're a statewide organization that works with food shelves and food banks throughout the state who are working desperately to try and meet the hunger needs of those who have grown exponentially within the last decade. But really, just in the last year, we've seen a 24% increase in the visits to food shelves, about 9.2 million visits. Seniors have increased 9.3%, and children have increased 38%. Now, the members of the community, the hunger relief community throughout the state of Minnesota, have been really innovative in trying to look for every source that they can to bring in resources into the food shelves. Oftentimes, people who are seeking emergency assistance don't come with one single need for food, but have a lot of other needs. The newly unemployed is an additional burden and the on the food shelves, and we're seeing more of that, and I think Byron will talk from a suburban perspective about what that really means to our neighbors who are not just the metro area but the urban and the rural areas in the state of Minnesota. The charity picture themselves, the food that's donated to food shelves, and Minnesotans are historically very generous to food shelves, combined with the increase in the TFAP program that was provided by the stimulus, has provided some bedrock to the food shelves. But the simple fact of the matter is that they can no longer meet the needs. This committee has been extraordinarily generous in their time to us on an annual basis of coming and talking to you about this need of hunger, and I'm very honored to be here again today. But we have a new level of reality in our office, and that is that since June we've operated the Minnesota Food Helpline. It's a 1-888 number that anyone in the state of Minnesota can call for assistance about how they can start to meet their hunger needs. We've heard from 63 counties in the state of Minnesota from people who are experiencing a dramatic need for food. And I just would like to relay to you one call which the Associate Director, Jessica Francis, received one evening late in the day on a Friday. And this is just one of many calls. In fact, the answering machine was full of calls this morning from people who said, you know, they earn $27,000 or $29,000 a year and they don't qualify for food stamps. What can we do to help them? Or food support. But this call came from a woman in Woodbury, and she said to Jessica, is there any way you can help me? I lost my job. My unemployment has run out. My daughter's coming home from school, and there's no food. There's nothing I can give her when she comes home. And Jessica said, well, can you get to a hot meal program? Can you And she said, well, I don't have any gas for the car, and I don't have any money to put any gas in the car to get anywhere. And she said, I'm just so embarrassed. I've worked all my life, and I've worked hard. I thought something was going to turn around. I thought there would be some avenue that I would be able to get enough food for my family, but I don't have anything for her when she comes home. I don't know what to tell her. I don't know what to do anymore. I've tried everything. I've borrowed money. I've run through all my savings. I've run through every option that I have, and there's just nothing left. And this woman just cried on the phone, and Jessica said, well, the best I can do for you right now is that the food shelf in your area is going to be open tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. And we can see what we can do about trying to get you a ride there so that you can get some food and come back. But I have nothing more to offer you tonight. There's nothing I can do for you right now, for you and your daughter. The best thing I can do is point you in the way of your neighbors. And there are people pointing their friends and family who are unemployed and who are struggling in this economy every day to their friends, to their families, to their faith communities. And they're receiving help, but there just isn't enough help to go around. You've heard the stories about people who once donated to food shelves, how they now are users of food shelves in circumstances they never expected to be in for longer periods than they ever expected to be in. This isn't just a rough spot that we're going to make it through. It's going to take a while for the jobs to pick up, for the economy to improve. We are lucky in this country that we have been foresightful enough to have school lunch and school breakfast programs for children. But even in those programs, if children on reduced fee lunch are not able to pay, they're turned away. They're turned away at the lunch counter. We have summer feeding programs. We've been working on that area. We have application assistance throughout Catholic Charities, through some of the food banks, and through the CAP agencies to help people fill out the CAP to be able to get the help that they need through food support. Food support brings valuable dollars into communities in a way that can stimulate the economy, which is great. It was recognized as a very successful program in the Stimulus Act, and we're doing everything we can to get those resources out to people. But the system was never set up to sustain people. It was set up to supplement. Even the food support program is a supplemental nutrition program. It was never set up to sustain people through long periods of withstanding no income. We're in the process now of looking to your and other bodies to help us to meet the needs of many in the middle class who find themselves with no income, who may have a little bit above the asset level to keep them from qualifying, but enough so that they aren't going to fall into the abyss for long periods of time. And that's what we want to do. We want to make sure that people are back on their feet as quickly as they can be, that we can offer them the kind of assistance that they need. Our organization, in working collaboration with the Twin Cities United Way, with food shelves throughout the state, and with the food banks, have really banded together to try and meet this need, but we need your help. I understand the dramatic economic strain that you have in dealing with the budget, but your neighbors and your friends are dealing with this on a daily basis, and on a day when some of us are fasting for Ash Wednesday, those days are every day for some people in our state. So I would like to introduce my colleague Brian Lair from CEEP, and he's going to give you a local perspective. Thank you very much for...
Thank you, and we'll take questions, I think, when you're both completed, when the testimony is completed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Excuse me for hacking at you. All right, I'll do this, and then you'll really hear me coughing. My name is Byron Lair, and I work at Community Emergency Assistance Program, or CEEP, as it's commonly known. Now, we are primarily a food shelf. We do other things. We make no-interest car loans to families to buy cars so they can get back and forth to work. We do Meals on Wheels. We have a clothing closet. But the food shelf is our primary business, and I should say food shelves. And for the folks in the audience, our main food shelf is in Brooklyn Park, but we also have a second food shelf in the Blaine Human Services Center that services primarily Blaine and Fridley area, but technically all of Anoka County. And as an example of what's been happening because of this economy, in October, we opened a third food shelf in Maple Grove. And that's where we are getting our customers, and I'll reference that handout graph here in just a minute, but it tells you what's happening in Brooklyn Park, Brooklyn Center, the southern part of Anoka, above the river, like the city of Anoka, and the Champlin area. We know these are tough times, and Colleen has, I think, adequately described it. I won't belabor that point, but what I want to do with that graph is just highlight, if you look at that chart, and I've decided I don't like it anymore. We do a three-year running total for our board to show them what's happening at the food shelf. And, of course, this year we dropped off 07, which isn't on that chart. Every month in 08, we served more people and distributed more food than we did in 07. The chart won't show you that. What it does show you is that every month in 09, we served more people and more food than the same month in 08, and January has started the same way. These are really, really tough times. Despite the fact that we provide 3 to 5 days worth of food to a family once a month, we know that parents are skipping meals so that their kids don't go hungry. And that's not a good thing. They don't make good decisions when they're hungry. They don't make good workers when they're hungry. In December of last year, not counting a special program that we did at the holidays, our two food shelves, the one in Blaine and the one in Brooklyn Park, served over 1,200 unduplicated families. Most of these families, in fact, the vast majority of them, are working. Our typical family comes into the food shelf about 3 times a year. This is not a regular thing. They are working. They are right on the edge. And a car repair, kids need clothes, rent gets raised. Those are the things that throw these families into a real economic turmoil. And at least with the food shelf assistance, we can help them a little bit. And while our volunteers are packing a food order, we sit down with the family and go over their economics, their budget, their expenses, resources that might be available to them, how they can spend their money differently, and hopefully move them a little bit out of poverty. To address this particular bill, $500,000 to me is $2.5 million. I can buy $5 worth of food with a dollar. We get it through Second Harvest, through the Emergency Food Shelf Network. And if I really wanted to show you the impact of those kinds of dollars, because we buy from Second Harvest and the Emergency Food Shelf Network, we're also eligible to get free food, things that we don't pay for. So in reality, I can probably get $8 to $9 worth of food for a dollar when you count that stuff that is donated. And we also have tremendous support from faith communities, civic groups, schools in our communities that bring food into the food shelf. The other thing that I wanted to let you know is that we are all relatively frugal people in this business. This is just a used grocery bag. I brought it home on the weekend. With 1,200 families coming into us in a month, we go through a lot of bags and we go through a lot of boxes. If I have to buy this thing, it's a nickel. And so we encourage people in our community to give us their bags. Now, I picked up 150 bags this morning from the Brooklyn Park Rotary. They have a Bags for Byron program, as they call it. And before we get to questions, I'd like to leave you with just one story. I see them all the time, but when this Bags for Byron program was started, and of course, you know, it's kind of cute little thing, and I'm leaving the office for a meeting in the middle of the afternoon, and there was a young lady standing talking to our receptionist, and she was holding a bag. And I could tell it was a bag of bags. It was pretty light. I could see there were bags in it. Normally, I stop and I thank everybody that is making any kind of a donation, but she was very busy talking to our receptionist, and I was in a hurry. So I just kind of blew by and kind of acknowledged her. When I got to my car in the parking lot, she had come out of the office. And I just yelled across the parking lot. I said, "Thank you." And she stopped dead in her tracks, and she waved her hand, and she said, "What are you thanking me for?" And I just yelled back, I said, "For your donation." And she got as straight as a board, and almost angrily she said, "I didn't give you anything." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry, I thought you were the woman with the bag." They were empty. And I closed the car door and started walking towards her, and I got about from here to you, and I could see there's tears coming down her face. And she repeated, she said, "They were empty." And I said, "Well, we need bags." And I said, "Now we need less." And she said, "I have been out of work for 5 months. Every day I go out and I put in at least 8 hours looking for a job. It is really depressing. And I have nothing to give you folks back for the help that you've given me. And I heard you needed bags. That's all I have." And of course I thanked her again and I shook her hand and we both took off. And she said, "You know, would you be willing to accept volunteer help from somebody like me?" She said, "You know, 40 hours a week looking for a job is really, really tough. I could do 35 hours pushing for a job, and if I worked for a half a day in your food shelf, I'd feel a lot better about myself, and I think it would help me." And she has done some volunteer work. We actually have a few folks that take time out from their job search almost as a mental health break to come because it makes them feel good. We've had two that I really didn't want to get jobs because they were so good. But we did give them references. Anyway, again, 500,000 gives us $2.5 to $3 million worth of purchasing power. And if you can see it in your hearts when you're putting this thing together, please remember that. And thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Mr. Lair. Any comments or questions from committee members for the witnesses or for Representative Benson? Representative Morgan?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank the testifiers for the story they have to tell today. We know there are serious problems with families who very recently have been in the middle class and in communities like a Maple Grove or a Minnetonka or a Burnsville. Who are really struggling. So I appreciate the story you have to tell. And I want to thank Representative Benson. Nutrition and making sure children and their families are well fed has been a consistent issue for you since we and I came into the legislature together just 3 years ago. So I want to congratulate you on continuing to find ways to keep kids and families from going hungry, even in these tough times. We're going to have to make some tough choices. We're going to have to set some priorities, and thanks, Representative Benson, for reminding us how important this is.
Thank you. Other comments? Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious from either of the testifiers. I noticed it seems that the amount of pounds distributed per family, if I did it right, looks like it went up. And I'm wondering, recently there was some article in one of the papers I read about one of our local, I believe it was about Cub, and how they're working with the local food shelves and able to churn this stuff real quick. And I'm wondering, have you seen an increase in donations? Or I think I did it right, but it looks like you're able to get more pounds out per family between 08 and 09.
Let me respond to that from the chart, and I'm sure Colleen can embellish that. So, Madam Chair and Representative, we count a family as people living in one address. And one of the things that we've seen over the last year and a half is families doubling up. So, and we haven't changed how we view a family. And I'll give you an example. I have a good friend who lives with her husband and her son, who's a senior in high school. Her daughter and her daughter's husband moved to Chicago in January of last year for a really good job. And in April, both of them lost their jobs. And so mom and dad said, well, come on home. So they came home with two kids, moved in with my friend and her husband and their sibling. And the day after they moved in, he was laid off. So now there are four adults and three children, and we count that as one household or one family. We've toyed with trying to break that up, but it really messes up with all the record keeping. So some of the family sizes that you're seeing in 08 to 09 are actually combined families or friends moving in with friends, but they are in one household address.
Yes, Madam Chair,
Ms. Verity.
The committee, the amount of pounds that is distributed is not equal among the state. It depends on really what the availability of resources. As far as the donations to the food shelves, I think that they have seen an increase in donations. And as I mentioned, the increase in the stimulus money for the TFAP program has been very helpful, but it's not kept up with the need. And the fact that there are so many new people coming into the food shelves is really where the growth is. And so donations are up, to answer your question, but the need has far outstripped those. It's kind of like the way we talk about our level of service in the food support program in the state of Minnesota. We fall on the bottom of being able to deliver food support to the members of our community. But, you know, just when you're about to take that measure, the level of people who are eligible for the program becomes so much greater because so many more people have fallen into poverty that it makes us look as if we're not as ambitious as we are. So.
Representative McNamara?
Well, if I could follow up a little more on the point about the donations, can you talk about maybe you don't know it, but what about like that article where it talked about how some of the food companies have changed some of their processes to really make a huge difference in the food that they're able to donate? Has that made a big difference, and is there specific companies that are doing a better job of that? Or
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, there are three big corporations within the state of Minnesota who are really kind of leading the way on that charge, and they're Land O'Lakes, General Mills, and Cargill. And they have been very active in hunger, in particularly in General Mills, is thinking of developing a new run of a product that would just be for the food shelves distributed through the food banks. And I think that there are Cub, Super Value, certainly local grocers are making a difference as far as donating. The Grocers Association itself is having continual conversations about what role they can play in getting the message out about using EBT cards and supporting food support in the grocery stores. As I perhaps didn't expand on in my initial remarks, we are banding together in a way with corporate America, through Feeding America, through the food banks, through the local food producers, through the brands, you know, you see on what's the biggest loser, every time they lose weight, money goes to Feeding America. I mean, we are beating every drum we can. So I think the response from corporate America has been good, but the need has so far outstripped the availability of product. As I said, though, please remember the major source, the bedrock source of product in the food shelves in the state of Minnesota is the commodities program, which is the national program through the government. That is the bedrock. That's what everybody builds upon to run a food shelf. And without the contribution of the stimulus program last year, we went from 4 million pounds to, and Ty Morris from OEO is in the audience, to 12 million pounds last year of TFAP product alone. And that really is, you know, high protein, high quality nutritional food that is distributed in the food shelves throughout the state of Minnesota. It's distributed on an equity basis, on the level of poverty, to the food banks, and then distributed to the food shelves at a very low or sometimes no cost, even for delivery. So, you know, it really is a remarkable system that we've developed. we're meeting this need. It is.
Madam Chair and
Mr. Lehrer.
Representative, from an individual food shelf perspective, we monitor this very carefully. My board is really nervous that if you look at those charts, with the food keep going out and the numbers keep climbing, and they keep telling me, well, if you don't get it donated, well, how are you going to pay for it? We consistently get between 40 and 50,000 pounds of food donated every month. About half of that comes from a program called Food Rescue through Second Harvest. And every Friday, they take a truck out to employers who have cafeterias and food programs like Medtronic and grocery stores, and they pick up stuff that is, in terms of the cafeterias, they don't want to keep it around over the weekend, and they're not going to sell it on Monday and Tuesday. The Second Harvest doesn't want to haul it back to their warehouse because it's going to sit 2 days, and then they have to truck it someplace else. So my deal, and I got this deal because United Way gave us money for a freezer, a big one, by the way, is we take everything off the truck. So it goes back empty. We've been consistently getting 6,000 pounds of food on a Friday. And that counts about half of the food that is donated to us on a monthly basis. The rest of it is now coming primarily from grocery stores where we pick up. And I'll sound like I'm a protagonist for Trader Joe's, but we pick up at the Maple Grove Trader Joe's 3 days a week. They give us about 100,000 pounds of food a year. Most of it's meat. They have a corporate policy of ordering more meat than they think they can sell so they can give it to the food shelves. By the way, there are two other food shelves that pick up the other times during the week. They just give away a lot of food. We've got a local Cub that when they do the buy one, get one, they have a big sign up, and it says, if you don't need the second one, you know, like a turkey or something big, let the checkout personnel know, and we'll set it aside for the food shelf, and then we pick it up after the promotion is over. But churches and schools and civic groups make up the rest of those monthly donations. Now, I used to stop in my parking lot 2 to 3 times a day and help senior citizens who would pull in, pop the trunk, and bring in 3 to 4 bags of food. It does not happen. I have not had a couple come into either of our parking lots, three now that we've opened the Maple Grove location, with bags of food in over a year. Those are the people that Colleen was referencing earlier that either need the food themselves now and can't afford to donate it, or are using the food shelves themselves. So it's the civic groups, the churches, the schools who do drives. And of course, we got Minnesota Food Share coming up in March, and I hope you're all going to be generous to your local food shelves that put the food in our facility so that we can give it away.
Okay, thank you. Representative Severson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Moriarty, from the sounds of it, you're kind of involved on an international level, and I think you've given a great testimony about the wanting for communities to get engaged in this process and are huge contributors in this process. In the three large corporations that you've talked about, just kind of a story, we were going through California a few months ago, went through the San Joaquin Valley, I've been through there previously, and it was a shocker to me to see that they had turned off the water to a huge food-producing area of the United States, literally devastating miles and miles of food-producing areas because of a minnow that was found in the aquifer. So it goes to the issue of we have tremendous needs in terms of feeding the hungry, and here is a piece of land, a large, very productive piece of land, which is now laying fallow with orchards that took decades to grow and produce, that is being put under the thumb of the environmentalists who are killing our production. So it's kind of one of those deals. Have you had any opportunity, or is there ability for you to put some voice to this process to say our priorities are screwed up here?
members of the
committee,
I you know, I'm very rarely called upon to give any kind of advice in that arena. However, we do look for every opportunity to work with growers to glean product that maybe isn't, you know, right for sale on the marketplace, whether they're apples in the case of Minnesota and Wisconsin, or working with farmers markets or others. But as far as agricultural production, everything I learned about agriculture production, because I grew up in Southwest Minneapolis, is things that I've learned through my participation in the Farm Bill at the last. And I was a party to, but not a decision maker in many of those conversations. So I don't have a voice to that, but I didn't have some education about it.
And just to follow up that, Madam Chair, thank you. And I would encourage you, you know, because you are an advocate for the hungry, and you would have a voice out in Washington to say, what gives on this? The bottom line is those farmers had signs pasted everywhere. Congress did this to us, and there has been no voice that I've seen in the in the media that says this atrocity is going on. They've just quelled it, and you got a tremendous amount of production that has been basically put to the put into a big dust bowl because of an environmental issue that really has gone awry. So I would encourage you, maybe if you could look into it, just look at the San Joaquin Valley in California. The reason I say that is I was there decades ago, and it is a huge production area for, and my father would go out there for gleanings for the hungry. Second gleaning, same thing, and they would go out there and after the main harvest had been done, he would go out there and they would box up stuff and send it to food shelves like yours. And so this is being destroyed under our very eyes, and I think it's an important issue that needs to be addressed.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Moriarty, just before we paint all environmentalists with the same brush, would you mind sharing with me what I know is happening with a lot of Minnesota farmers, organic farmers and others who are part of the whole system with the...
Absolutely. Several years ago, we started working with the Community Supported Agriculture Movement to get as many fresh fruits and vegetables as we could into the food shelves. And I think that really, it works well on an urban area, but it works almost better on a rural participation. Those kinds of organic products now are available through many of the food shelves. And the thing that I think that is remarkable and commendable is that in many cases, there's education pieces that accompany the product so that the preparation and the value of that fresh fruit and produce is available to people. And that's made a significant difference. I know that even as a recipient of some of the CSAs, sometimes need education about what all the vegetables are. And you think you know everything until you start to receive some of those products. So the farmers movement, the organic movements, the farm growers themselves, along with big corporations, those people do not forget the hungry. They are not the people who we are. They are our champions. They are working on behalf of hungry people. The local grocers are working on behalf of hungry people. And they recognize the faces of the same people who used to be their regular customers who can no longer afford to be able to buy their weekly groceries in their stores. And they understand and understand the value of the food support program because that's actual money that can be spent on Main Street in throughout the state of Minnesota. And that's very important to revitalizing the economy and to giving people a sustainable way to support their family. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I just wondered if you might also mention, I know that the types of commodity foods that are available now do take into account some other factors as compared to in the past where I think you had just a handful of certain kinds of foods.
Right.
And now we have, if I'm not mistaken, some cultural products that are reflective more of what cultures might use in their cooking. And then also to deal with some of the allergies and so on that food had. Could you just tell us a little bit about that? I think it's an important growth in this growth of consciousness, I guess, as well.
Madam Chair, thank you for asking those questions. There is an ordering system of which Ty Morris, who's in the audience from OEO, and John Woolham from my staff work together to order the commodities. And there's a high value placed on, because we know there are many culturally specific foods that people who are new to our country are looking for in the food shelves, or our needed for dietary, and so they make every effort to bring in as many foods as they can from the menu of choices that's available from the commodities program. In addition to that, specific products that are available for culturally specific foods, those producers themselves have stepped forward and been our partners. Mm-hmm. And dietary concerns, along with the food support, the program, there is also called a SNAP education, which is run out of the University of Minnesota Extension Department, where nutrition educators are located in the regional county offices that work with people who are receiving food support to be able to educate them about what the value is of buying those kinds of dietary specific foods, not just for people who are on restricted diets, but in particular for seniors. They will be, and people all over the state have referenced this, they come to the food shelves, and if they're given the opportunity to pick, they'll pick very little. They're saying, I really don't need much, you know, I just need this. And after some explanation of having the right diet to accompany medication makes the medication work, you know, the way that it was intended to and it was prescribed to you, and the importance of that, we can work with our seniors to increase their knowledge, and they'll take the right kind of foods to reinforce that. And that's a very important and crucial element of working with the senior population. We need to do more outreach to them to make sure that they're not only visiting the food shelves and getting the help that they need, but that they're enrolling in the food support program, because then they can get the right kind of food to make sure that their medications are working, and then they won't be in the position of having to choose between food or medication, which we do not want to see. You know, oftentimes when I'm speaking to senior groups, I start out by saying, this is the benefit. You worked hard all your life. You have no shame in taking Social Security. You have no shame in taking Medicare. There is no shame for you after working hard all your life that you would avail yourself of this benefit of food support. It will make your life, it will extend your life if you have a sound nutritional diet. And it will make your medication work, and it will help your children sleep easier knowing that you are well cared for. Do this as a favor to your children and your grandchildren. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious if either one of you can talk about what percentage of the people, I know a lot of times people aren't eligible for other programs, or they aren't enrolled in other programs even though they may be eligible. Do you have any idea how many people that come to the food shelf are actually getting food assistance from the government already? You know, like what I used to call food stamps, the EBT card or whatever. How many of the people that come to the food shelf are in one of those programs, or don't we know?
Madam Chair,
there's
a different intake process, level of intake for the 300 food shelves throughout the state of Minnesota, but that's a commonly asked question, and the best way that we know that is by survey of people. When you go to a food shelf, you don't have to declare that you are receiving benefits to get help. But oftentimes, to continue to receive help, you will have to fill out more extensive paperwork, and those questions will be asked. So I don't have a direct answer for you, like so many percentage of people who go to food shelves are also on EBT. But I do want to caution you to remember that the food support program, or the food stamp program, was never intended to be the only source of your food. It always was accompanied, was meant to be a supplemental program. It's not sustainable for a family, for instance, throughout the month. And I do know that over 60% of the people who visit food shelves are working people who are currently employed. So that's not a direct answer to your question, but that's kind of the best I can do at this moment.
Mr. McNamara?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if they are currently in a program, do you ask them if they have as much need for the food as if they weren't in a program? I mean, some people are probably, I think one of you testified, you know, if you make more than $27,000, you're not eligible. I'd imagine there's some people making less than 27 that just have too much pride mm-hmm. to go enroll in a food stamp program or whatever we call it today. But they may, when they get so hungry, come to your place. So do you try and get them, if because I'm trying to look at this. I happened to stop by Cub last night on my way home, and they had cornflakes for $1 a box, the Cub brand. Well, if you go down the Frosted Flakes line, I think they were $4.99 or whatever. They're probably a different size box. You can imagine I don't do too good a job of shopping anymore, Madam Chair. Didn't have all my coupons lined up and all that. But I really do feel, especially in these tough times, that if you really shop hard, I mean, whether you're shopping at Kohl's or Cub, it seems like there's a lot of opportunities to really save today. And with the food shelf serving such an important role, I know you don't want to turn somebody away, but I'm wondering if that would maybe make the ones that are already collecting a significant amount of aid maybe to leave more for the people that maybe have a greater need. I don't know if you can. It's got to be delicate. I mean, you're trying to help them when they're down and out.
Madam Chair and Representative,
Mr. Lair.
From our perspective, and we see that too, and sometimes we buy the dollar boxes of cereal, and we shop and compare, and occasionally we can go to a store and beat a Second Harvest price. Not often, but when we do, we'll grab it. This is a partial answer to this question and to your earlier one. We generally give between 15 and 16 pounds per person in a family of food. And it counts canned goods, and if we happen to get some good meat from our friends at Trader Joe's or Cover Rainbow. And that's for every member in the family. That's not a lot of food. You know, if you go to the grocery store this weekend and come back and weigh your food, 15 pounds is not a heck of a lot. And our families only come in once a month. That's the maximum that they can come. And again, back to my earlier comments, our average family comes in three times a year. They're not using this except when they really, really get desperate. If you go look at that chart again, the number, if you look at February food shelf use, it's lower than January's income tax refunds. They go grocery shopping when they have money. They don't come to the food shelf. We're a wonderful place. And our new, by the way, our new food shelf is a vacant grocery store. And we still left the name on it. It says Family Market, so people feel a little bit more comfortable coming there. But despite the fact that I have wonderful staff and great volunteers and we have decent food, if you had your choice, you're not going to go to a food shelf to get your food. And you're not getting enough from a food shelf to carry you through more than 3 to 5 days a month. So you have to do the kind of shopping that you're talking about and grab that dollar box when you can.
Yeah. I have you down, Representative Morgan, but I think Representative Hayden was to this point. Okay. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifiers, I've been trying to figure out the point Representative Severson was trying to make earlier, and I'm not sure I'm aware of all the issues he's talking about with a minnow or whatever. One point I think he does make very well is the difficulties of using or trying to use, trying to create an agricultural industry in an area where the climate perhaps isn't best suited for an agricultural industry with rainfall and so forth. But it kind of begs a question, I think. Is the problem that the United States is not producing enough food to feed its people? Because I never thought that was a problem. I thought we were pretty much feeding the world. Or is the problem we're not getting the food to the people who are hungry? We're not getting food to people in an affordable way who are down in their luck in hard times. What's the problem there?
Madam Chair,
Minority
Committee, I would say the problem is that the United States is not producing enough jobs to be able to give people enough sustainable income to support themselves.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to reiterate what Ms. Moriarty has said, I think, a couple of times, which I think is extremely important, that the food support program is a supplemental program to people's nutrition. And so it often is characterized, and I think mischaracterized, as a lot of money to people who then, you know, could abuse it, misuse it, or go out and get more. It is a small amount of money that is used to supplement what we would hope people would go out and buy for themselves, and that the food shelf comes in line after those funds have run out, and that, as Mr. Lehrer has said quite eloquently, try to get them through, typically just a few times a year, and I think you're seeing that much more just for the last 3 or 4 days of the month or whenever their income source comes in. So just to, for me and some of the work that I've done to put this in perspective, and I think Representative Fritz, who had a bill yesterday that really dealt with this issue of asset limits and to try to get more people on food support, she said she had a woman at her church in Fairbowl, if I may, that was adamant about not going to the food shelf because of the stigma mm-hmm. and the embarrassment that she would have, that the people in her community would know, and would much rather try to figure out how to get on food support, because then she would drive to Owatonna, I guess about 50 miles away or 40 miles away, to get her groceries and kind of come back in the cover of night so that people didn't know she was hungry. And so I just want to put that view on the issue that Representative Benson is bringing, which is about hunger, the stigma and the shame that people have when they feel like that they can't feed their family, and put that in that context, and I'm not as familiar with all of the agricultural policy. I don't come from that district. I did do a little time in the military in the San Joaquin Valley in the late 80s, and they do actually produce a tremendous amount of food in Central California. But I think all of that aside, I think this is an issue about people being hungry and have been hungry over a long period of time, and right now we're seeing people that used to give are now getting from the food shelf, or people who used to give to the food shelf are now feeding their families or their communities, even if they're on a food support program, because there isn't enough food there. I happen to serve in a district that has a big food shelf. The Sabathany Community Center serves a tremendous amount of food, and I don't know where they rank, but I know that they're pretty high, and every day that I go to work, I see long lines of people getting food. This is a fundamental right that I think that each and every person should have, is to eat, and I would want us to make sure that even though we're in tough economic times, as we're all liking to say and mention and talk about, that if we don't feed our children, if we don't feed the families that feed our children, then where they live or the job that they get will be moot because they won't be here.
Okay. Madam Chair, probably would like to move towards the conclusion.
I have actually one more question, if you don't mind. It's of the witnesses. I know that as you mentioned, you do get donations from the growers of all different kinds. One of the things I've wondered about, I know there is quite a movement, and it's led by our president and his wife, to do more community gardening, mm-hmm. so that people can provide some of their own foods. And I'm just wondering, have the food shelves and food banks, have they been part of this in some way, in terms of being a place where people can either maybe pick up seeds or seedlings, or somehow get into the whole gardening so they can do some of this at home and or in their community garden? I'm just wondering if there's anything, stories for that to share, and if not, maybe it's something that we can think about.
Madam Chair, absolutely. The Grow a Row has been an active program, and I am just a newly educated master gardener in the Hennepin County system myself, and I know that we are working as master gardeners throughout the state, not only with food shelves, but in Hennepin County, for instance, in one of the school districts, there's two projects that I'm working on as a master gardener. One of them is rehabilitating a greenhouse that was attached to a local school so that we can start to grow some vegetables that they can use, not only to teach kids about the environment and growing food, but use in the school cafeteria. And the second one is landscaping Habitat for Humanity homes. But the whole movement of Grow a Row, of bringing in additional produce into the food shelves, of working with the food banks, is one that has gained a lot of ground. And the food shelves themselves do have seeds and work with people to be able to grow gardens. That's a tremendous growth area, because people are more interested in growing their own food, and there are more resources available throughout the state. I was so impressed at the training that I was given as a master gardener, and I'd been trying for 5 years. I had applied for 5 years to become a part of the Master Gardener Program in Hennepin County. I finally made it this year. So
congratulations.
Thanks.
Okay. I believe Representative Stevenson, did you have another?
Just, Madam Chair, yeah, and just in response to Representative Morgan's question here, and I just wanted to make sure I came across correctly. My desire was, because sometimes we don't understand our position, mm-hmm. and you have tremendous amount of voice in what you do, because everybody wants to support that. And I think the issue would be if you were able to get a letter off to Congress, to Speaker Pelosi, and just say, look, you know, we're advocating for feeding the hungry here. I've got a picture here that basically was there, and it says, no water, no jobs, higher food costs. I mean, this is what they're publishing out there. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those issues that I think, if it gets international or national attention here, would kind of reopen this thing and take a look at it. I think you have a voice, and I would strongly encourage you to use that voice. I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate the fact that we are meeting needs through your services, and I want to thank you for that.
Thank you very much, sir. I take your suggestion to heart.
Representative Stevenson, I just have a question. Do you know when which administration brought that forward?
I believe it was this one, because they just shut the water off.
It would be interesting to find that out, because I think I've heard about this for a couple of years now, so I don't think it's a brand new initiative that came with this administration, but we can check into that.
Yeah, Madam Speaker, and along those lines, I think the issue really would go to the environmentalists, the power the environmentalists have to be able to shut off water, and you could argue the fact, well, water shouldn't be there, as Representative Morgan has. The fact of the matter is, we have, as a people, produced land that has been barren. We have produced food. We do irrigation water management, and that has made us a bountiful nation, and to say that if the rain doesn't go there, we shouldn't grow it, then we have problems.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'm not an expert on that, and I wouldn't know whether the Environmental Protection is involved in that. But I have read over the years that there is a major conflict in the western states, particularly California, over the diversion of fresh water and whether or not those resources should be used in these farm areas, or whether they would be better used in the large cities. There's a big fight in California over water resources, and if you look at the history of the West since at least the middle 19th century, this fight over water and water resources is a continuing one. Mm-hmm. And I suspect as the population grows larger, there will be even greater pressure to take from the farm community and send it into the urban areas.
Yeah. Okay, so I think what we'll do now is just if you have any final comments, we'll
just a very quick one, and then and I appreciate all the time and the excellent testimony. I see this, and I think many of us on this committee see this as basically a moral issue. We've heard of all the organizations and civic groups that are working and helping to support this, including the funding from the federal stimulus, which has been a big help. But I think the state of Minnesota and the legislature and the governor's office are a bully pulpit to some degree, too. And even though the request is quite small, $500,000, very small, it does indicate that we as an institution see this as a critical and basic need. And I think our legislature and everyone on this committee and in the House and Senate and the governor's office ought to have a little skin in the game. And so, again, I'm hoping we can get a unanimous vote in this committee to lay this over, because later then we can discuss mm-hmm. our priorities.
Okay. We don't actually need to vote on it, but this bill,
right.
bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in a committee bill that,
right.
that I discussed earlier. Thank you very much for your testimony and for the bill, Representative Benson. Just a couple other things we need to take care of. We have minutes from February 9th, and I think Representative McNamara, I saw you reading them.
I will move the minutes of February 9th.
Representative McNamara moves the approval of the minutes of Tuesday, February 9th. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion prevails, and those minutes are adopted, approved. just an announcement. We will not be meeting next Tuesday, February 23rd, but we will be meeting on Wednesday, and we expect to have both the departments of this committee has jurisdiction over, both the Department of Health and the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, here to talk with us about the governor's recommendations. Unless there's any further discussion, the meeting is adjourned.